Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 16th, 2016. Pretty amazing. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator. Same thing I say every week, but DR, it's really a pleasure to have you here every week because you know so much and it's so much fun to talk to you. Mr. DR Tucker, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great, great. So, DR, there are a number of issues that are important and interesting, but may not have the prominence in the press that most climate hawks would catch up with. And so I thought it would be useful for us to kind of touch on them, give people a little background so when they see this little tiny thing in the newspaper, it'll pick up on it and say, hey, that's important to me, right? So that they can put these things in context.
Yes.
One of these things is something you and I have talked about in the past, and it is based on the fact that oil companies like Exxon have known for many years, it's pretty clear now, have known for many years that climate change is caused by carbon pollution, much like the tobacco industry knew that cigarette smoke caused cancer. Exxon has known all along. There are attorneys general investigating Exxon for having deceived their shareholders over the last 30 years about the risk to Exxon of the product that they're selling, right? And so that's a big deal. And my understanding is this past week there's been some article saying just how frightened Exxon is. Did you see any of those articles?
Yes, there are a couple of articles along these lines. The first one was from Politico.com, which was about Exxon Mobil executives basically losing their you-know-what over the prospect of facing civil litigation as a result of, you know, trying to deceive the public about the reality of human-caused climate change. They're basically trying to push back by, at one point they went to Representative Ted Lieu of California and three other congressmen trying to make the case that they did not knowingly deceive the public and the meeting didn't go over all that well. And they've also tried to have some surrogates push back against the activists and scientists who brought up the stories about what Exxon knew. As part of that Politico story, they noted that Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island has said that if there is a changing of the guard in the United States Senate on the heels of this November's election, the new majority in the Senate will push to hold hearings about what the fossil fuel industry knew, similar to the hearings in the 1990s, where the tobacco executives all said that, you know, they believed that nicotine was not addictive. In conjunction with that, Representative Lieu and Senator Whitehouse sent a letter to the American Geophysical Union, essentially criticizing the American Geophysical Union for continuing to accept donations from ExxonMobil and advising the American Geophysical Union that as recently as 2014, ExxonMobil was still donating money to people who held, shall we say, Donald Trump's views on climate change.
Just so that people who may not be that familiar with these things, but the American Geophysical Union is kind of a national association of scientists and engineers who work on geophysical, that is, Earth-centered problems. And over the decades, the Geophysical Union has had close ties with the oil industry for obvious reasons, right? Understanding where the geography of a place and where the oil might be. But the American Geophysical Union, the AGU, has in recent years been rather clear about the reality of climate change. And so it's strange that they would continue to accept money from Exxon, and I guess now they're backing away from that. They're looking looking a second time at taking money from Exxon as a sort of a professional organization, which is what they are, right?
Yes, that was the report from dsmogblog.com that said that American Geophysical Union is thinking twice about taking that money from Exxon. And of course, there was another story in The Guardian basically saying that the government of the Philippines, and we all know how the Philippines was just devastated by Typhoon Haiyan, which killed like 6,000 people 3 years ago, they're now looking as to whether ExxonMobil and other fossil fuel companies can be held legally responsible for the damage they caused with their carbon pollution if there can be some sort of successful effort similar to the unfortunately failed effort, similar to the we all remember the Kivalina versus ExxonMobil case from a few years ago that failed. They're trying to see if there's some way that, that they can that there can be a legal strategy developed where they can successfully, you know, go after ExxonMobil and other fossil fuel companies. Exactly, for you know, the literal loss and damage they sustained.
Well, so I'm looking at the Politico article, and it said that it basically at 3 points is that the industry consultants are accusing states' attorneys general of colluding with environmentalists. So so Exxon is saying all you AGs, you know, you're all in cahoots, and they're questioning the role of foundations such as the Rockefeller Foundations in funding this stuff. They're looking to launch counter probes. So this is this famous thing now where all the red state attorneys general get together and march off and sue until they get to the Supreme Court, right? They're doing this with immigration and so they're going to go off and try and investigate environmental groups, just as you said. And but the most interesting one is that the industry backers' main argument, so the oil people's main argument is that these questions about what they knew and when they knew it basically are constraining their constitutional, their First Amendment right to speak. And there's a great line here from somebody, Mr. Walker, who told Politico that Walker was the Attorney General for the Virgin Islands, who's investigating. He said, "The First Amendment is not a defense to fraud." He said, "The Constitution provides no right to mislead shareholders," which I think is great. So, I mean, just people should know that when, because this will probably pop up in the news somewhere, right? That Exxon is going after the those big bad enviros. Well, it's because Exxon is now scared because getting close to the family and the internal books, I guess I should say, for Exxon, huh?
And it's an interesting dynamic because we mentioned Senator Sheldon Whitehouse mentioning the changing of the guard that could lead to more of congressional investigation of ExxonMobil. It is very interesting because part of the subtext of these pieces is, and it's mentioned in Politico.com, the whole dynamic of ExxonMobil for the past 7 years saying officially that they acknowledge that the science is real, that it's human caused, it's caused by the burning of fossil fuels, and their stated advocacy, of a revenue-neutral carbon tax to address the issue. It raises the issue of, number one, whether as a means of trying to blow off the negative political heat, ExxonMobil will take its enormous lobbying power and enormous advertising power and actually channeled it to a sincere advocacy to encourage Congress to pass such legislation. And number two, if we could see, you know, could be a miracle of some kind, if you could see the confluence of two events. Number one, a changing of the guard in Congress, similar to what Sheldon Whitehouse is talking about, and number two, an attempt by ExxonMobil to sort of limit their negative heat by sincerely lobbying for a federal revenue neutral carbon tax, and that and could in fact that result by potentially even this time next year in a federal revenue neutral carbon tax legislation going through the United States House and Senate. That would be an amazing. It would not justify, you know, attorneys general leaving ExxonMobil alone. Obviously, they have to be held to account for what they did. But it would be very, very interesting if this sort of political pressure and the attempt to sort of negate this political pressure by sincerely using its lobbying engine to try to get a carbon tax passed. It would be very, very interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the next year or so.
I think that we will watch that. So, yes. So DR, the second sort of interesting substory is that most people have heard about this ironic, enormous fire up in the Canadian middle of Canada, Alberta, Canada, right, with this something like 80 or 90,000 people in a town called Fort McMurray had to be evacuated because of the fire. So, yes. Tell me, what's climate change got to do with it, to quote Tina Turner?
It has been very impressive to see the number of stories in print media basically making the point and going to climate scientists and saying that this could not have happened without the influence of carbon pollution, without the influence of human-caused climate change. Even though we've discussed at length the fact that televised media still seems not to get it, nevertheless, print media, the New York Times, a lot of newspapers in Canada, a number of stories, on an international level, have basically said that this is our future, a hot and hellacious future.
The argument is that the winter was warm and relatively dry. All the snow that fell melted by early April, and so mm-hmm. the place was a tinderbox. And boom, when the spark came, it was just. What do you expect? I mean, this is back mm-hmm. to the, there was some immediate cause, but the underlying condition was because climate change had dried the place out.
Mm-hmm. And we've noted previously the irony of this occurring in tar sands country, this occurring, right next to the tar sands that were going to be, shipped out through the Keystone XL pipeline. We should also note that how interesting it is that, After she became the premier of Alberta, Rachel Notley, the new premier of Alberta, proposed a carbon tax, and now you understand just why one is needed, don't you?
So I got one DR that I wanted to just point out. We don't have to spend very long on it, but there's the website called Climate Progress. It's under the Think mm-hmm. Progress website heading. If you don't read it, it's a good thing to go check out. A guy named mm-hmm. Joe Rome, who's one of the prolific bloggers there, he put up mm-hmm. an article that made the following case that the title of the article is something like "Everything You Know About Climate Change Is Wrong," and his argument is that in the Paris Agreement of last December, you and I talked about it at the time. The mm-hmm. agreement commits the world to significantly less than 2 degrees warming, which everyone interprets to mean that the maximum allowable rise in the Earth's temperature would be 1.5 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. And Rome's argument is that no one's absorbed that yet. And the implication of that is that we cannot wait for an energy miracle. We must have an immediate and enormous implementation of existing technologies, and those existing mm-hmm. technologies get us where we need to be. And it's to sort of sit around and wait for coal fusion to come along and save us from ourselves ain't going to mm-hmm. work. That we need to use the things that we have in our hand. I mean, did you see that article? What do you think of the argument that he made?
It was a very interesting argument. I think it ties into something that Jim Hansen had argued that, 1.5 degrees is basically, even if you declare 1.5 degrees Celsius an acceptable level of warming, it's still, going to result in a lot of misery, so that you have to sort of reduce things now as aggressively as possible. And, it's good on Joe Rome to sort of push back against the idea that, hey, we just need some sort of, energy miracle. I think it ties into the remark from Jeb Bush when he was running for president, saying that, some guy in a garage will figure out how to deploy clean energy.
Right, we need more R&D. Don't worry about the solar panels. We'll invent something. Right.
Exactly. The sense of urgency that is still seemingly not there in the public, even after all the things we've seen, the sense of urgency that we thought would be there after Superstorm Sandy, the sense of urgency that you figure would be there after Fort McMurray, right. People right. don't seem to be getting it on the scale they need to be getting it.
Right. So anyway, this is just a sort of list of things that are kind of under the radar. One of the things that goes way under the radar, DR, you're our resident media critic. We were talking before about the fact that CNN does not seem to have CNN, the cable news network, right, mm-hmm. does not seem to do a very good job of covering global warming. Is that mm-hmm. a fair statement? I mean, what are you thinking there?
It certainly ties into a recent study by Media Matters that found that in 2015 CNN ran more ads from oil companies than they did stories on climate change, and I think it's frustrating for a lot of people for two reasons. Number one, the fact that CNN was founded by Ted Turner, who certainly understood this issue and famously had essentially an environmental ombudsman at the network to sort of, you know, focus on the importance of these issues. And number two, the fact that CNN.com, through a gentleman by the name of John Sutter, has done a remarkable job covering this issue, but yet John Sutter doesn't seem to get his due share of airtime on CNN. And the funny thing is, reliable sources, Brian Stelter, he did a great segment, I believe about 2 years ago, talking about the fact that so many cable companies, including CNN, don't give this the comprehensive coverage it needs. And yet, even though Brian Stelter did that great segment a couple of years ago, and even though John Sutter still does these great shows, again, where are these stories on Anderson Cooper? Anderson Cooper 360? Why isn't it Anderson Cooper 350?
So tell me, DL, what can people do? I mean, if they agree with you, you mentioned before there's a petition going around.
There's a petition by Credo Action, basically telling CNN to stop being, as they call it, the Climate Negligence Network, and to improve its coverage. I believe at least, from what I see here, at least 69,000 people have already signed, and obviously, you know, the more the merrier, and maybe CNN will, you know, sort of step up. You know, CNN is owned by Time Warner, and it's time that people are warned about the risks here.
Oh dear. All right, so we will put the link to that in the blog, so you can go tell CNN what you think. It's the last thing I wanted to mention is the following. Those of you who have been listening in know that in Massachusetts, the Omnibus Energy Bill is coming down the pike. It turns out that the Omnibus Energy Bill is this big thing full of different kinds of energy policy. As we speak here in early May, right, this is the weekend of the 16th, the 15th, 16th, as we speak, that bill is being written in the Massachusetts State House in some dark, dank basement somewhere. Someone's got their quill and they're writing this bill out. It's an important time that if you live in Massachusetts to call your state representative and explicitly ask him or her to do the following things. That in that bill, when it finally sees the light of day, should include a 2% renewable portfolio standard increase each year. So the renewable portfolio standard is basically a minimum amount of clean energy that must be used each year. And by increasing that, you drive increasing amounts of clean power. The other thing that you should ask for, you can all write this down, I'll try and put it in the blog, we should ask for any that good environmental standards be applied to the building of any transmission lines that come into the state. Right, so we don't want to pave the top of Mount Washington to bring a electricity cable in from Canada, right? We want good environmental standards. And finally, perhaps most importantly, is that if the bill contains a tax on electricity users, electricity ratepayers, in order to pay for a natural gas pipeline, then you should ask your state representative to vote against the entire bill. The argument being that if that pipeline is built, it will essentially mean that we cannot make our Global Warming Solutions Act greenhouse gas targets. So it kind of moots the whole issue. So the strategy now is to say, if that tariff, they call it the pipeline tariff, the pipeline tax, if that's in the bill, want to kill the whole thing because net is not good for the environment. So we'll put up a link to how you can find your state rep. You can call up, say those things. You probably either get a recording or some flunky who will listen to you and write down what you say. But believe me, your state rep will find out what you think eventually. Okay.
And to that end, it was great to see the recent report that Senate President Stanley Rosenberg opposes this pipeline tax.
Yes.
If anybody who's been on YouTube the past couple of days in this region has, they've seen those great ads, you know, stop the pipeline tax, basically.
It's a very effective
ad campaign, which I believe is also running on you know, local television stations as well, as in addition to online.
I've seen it. I meant to mention that. They're, if you live in Massachusetts, you'll see those ads, won't you?
To paraphrase George H.W. Bush, read my lips, no new pipeline tax taxes.
Oh, God. All right. Anyway, so we'll tell folks, we'll try and put in links to most of this stuff in the blog. It's at massclimateaction.net/blog. Please leave us a comment. Please check out those links. They're oftentimes interesting. You can find the show, link to the show on Facebook. And, of course, there's a lot of interesting stuff on our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. And, of course, you can always go to iTunes. I don't know, did you see it, DR? There was an article in the New York Times this past weekend about the business of podcasting and how Apple isn't really managing the iTunes place very well to its own advantage. But we're still there, and this podcast is still on iTunes. Go get it while you can. So, DR, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.